580 AM and 90.9 FM, HD3, Urbana.
Greetings. Welcome to Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, coming to you live today, April 15th, 2012, on WILL AM 580, based here in beautiful Champaign, Urbana, Illinois. Today we're going to have as our guest a documentary filmmaker and actress talking about her first film she's made, a new one, a documentary called Misrepresentation, an extraordinary movie that we'll be talking about the entire hour on the portrayal of women and girls and sexuality in American popular culture. It's going to be a wonderful hour. I hope you'll join us for the full time. But before we go to our guest, let's go to Media Minutes.
Any views or opinions expressed by the hosts of Media Minutes are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of this station, its management, or licensee.
Welcome to Media Minutes. I'm Stevie Converse.
And I'm Candace Clement.
And I'm Megan Tatey.
Congress has deemed the third week of April Cybersecurity Week, and the House is set to vote soon on a new information-sharing bill intended to minimize cyber threats for the nation. But opponents of the bill say it maximizes privacy threats for the public. The Cyber Intelligence Sharing and Protection Act, or CISPA, would amend the National Security Act of 1947 to authorize Internet service providers and other companies to share customer data with the government. Civil and digital rights groups worry that the bill is too broad and vaguely worded. They also say it's unclear just what kind of information ISPs and online services like Facebook, Google, and Twitter might deem enough of a cybersecurity threat to funnel to the government. Kendall Berman is a National Security Fellow at the Center for Democracy and Technology.
We are very concerned about the breadth that the bill would allow so much information to be shared that includes customer content of emails and online communications directly with not just the government, but with the National Security Agency and with military and intelligence agencies.
The House introduced CISPA on the heels of two other bills that stirred public outrage about the future of the Internet, SOPA and PIPA. The fundamental difference, says Berman, is that CISPA focuses on cybersecurity, while SOPA and PIPA tackled intellectual property violations. Berman said CISPA could allow companies and the government to swap information right under the public's nose. The National Security Agency has conducted warrantless wiretapping for years.
So in terms of how it would affect the Internet user, not only is the bill so vague that it's somewhat unclear, but none of this needs to be communicated to the user. This is a bill that affects companies that don't need to seek your permission before they turn this information over to the government. And once the government gets it, there's no measures in the government to allow the public to know what the government does with that information.
The bill currently has 100 co-sponsors and 28 corporate supporters, including AT&T, Facebook, and Microsoft. Berman says companies might reconsider their support once they take a second look at the bill and understand their compliant role.
It puts them in a difficult position of having to respond to government requests for information about their customers.
The House will vote on the bill within the next few weeks. To find out more, go to the Center for Democracy and Technology at cdt.org and Save the Internet at savetheinternet.com.
And now for some Media Minutes updates.
There's good news and bad news this week for public media funding. First, the bad news. The National Endowment for the Arts has proposed substantial cuts to several PBS programs. The cuts, totaling more than $1 million, will affect popular shows like Great Performances and American Masters, as well as the critically acclaimed and Emmy-winning Independent Lens and POV. Neil Shapiro, president of New York Public Media's WNET, told the New York Times that the cuts will be damaging. He's hoping people will find the cuts too severe and call for more funding. Public television is the only place you see these things, he said. NEA applications more than doubled this year to 350, but its funding level remained the same. Executive director of Art 21, Susan Solins, doesn't hold the cuts against the NEA. She says Congress should appropriate more money to the NEA so it can fund a broader range of programs. The cuts will be officially announced on April 25th. But there is some good news to report. Fortunes are turning in three states where the picture of funding for public media looked bleak. The Oklahoma Educational Television Authority averted being zeroed out of the budget by a single vote in the state Senate. In Maine, lawmakers turned back Governor Paul LePage's second attempt to eliminate funding for public media and restored the full $1.7 million to the budget. And Florida Governor Rick Scott might be experiencing a change of heart. Last year, he vetoed state funding for public media, but this year, lawmakers voted to restore more than $300,000 for each of the state's PBS stations. Scott asked the groups to make a pitch as to why they were important to their communities and worth the investment. Public television stations made their case, Scott says. He has until April 21st to make a final decision. In other news, Senator Chuck Grassley is continuing his hold on Federal Communications Commission nominees Ajit Pai and Jessica Rosenworcel. Grassley has been holding the nominees hostage since last November. He wants FCC Chairman Julius Genachowski to hand over documents relating to a waiver the FCC granted to LightSquared, a high-speed wireless company that could provide some needed competition to the wireless market. The FCC revoked the waiver after tests showed that LightSquared's communications network affects GPS signals. The FCC has handed over documents to Grassley, but he called the information insufficient. You've been listening to Media Minutes, a production of Free Press, a national nonpartisan organization working to reform the media. For more information, visit freepress.net.
Okie dokie, welcome back to Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, coming to you live today on WILL AM 580. Our guest today, and my great pleasure to welcome to the program, is Jennifer Siebel Newsom, actress and filmmaker. And we're here to talk about her directorial debut, her first film, the documentary Misrepresentation, which premiered at the 2011 Sundance Film Festival and has been shown on the Oprah Winfrey Network channel and has gotten considerable and justified acclaim. Ms. Newsom, welcome to Media Matters.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's my pleasure, and I did have the chance to watch your film a couple times over the last few days, and it is an excellent film. I was really impressed at every level, the content as well as the production quality. It was really superb.
Thank you. Thanks, Bob.
And, you know, let's just talk. This is your first film. You are an actress, and this is your first crack at making a film. Why did you decide to make a film, and why this one specifically?
Mm-hmm. I right out of Stanford Business School, and I'd worked in Latin America and Africa before, and I kind of thought that that sexism was a third world phenomenon, and naively so. And when I was in Hollywood, it was sort of the tabloid culture really was taking off, and Britney Spears, Paris Hilton, and Lindsay Lohan were all increasingly tabloid fodder. And I couldn't imagine raising a young girl in particular in a climate that so demeaned, diminished, and objectified women. And I started to make a connection between the representations of women in the media world and women in the real world, and the disconnect there. And then I met my husband, who at the time was mayor of San Francisco, and was introduced to Senator Hillary Clinton, who was running for the presidency, and former Secretary of State Condi Rice, and really started to note, you know, that the media wasn't fully representing in healthy ways the complexity and diversity and intelligence of women, and that this was sending really unhealthy messages to young people in particular, communicating to them that a woman's value lies in her youth, her beauty, and her sexuality, and not in her capacity to lead.
One of the things that's striking, Jennifer Siebel Newsom, is that, as you pointed out, there's no question that women do not get the same pay as men for the same jobs, and
right,
there's discrimination still takes place, and the film talks about that.
Yes.
At the same time, the other process which is taking place is this generational shift where women are much more likely to be breadwinners, they're in the workforce,
right,
they're holding positions of responsibility and power as never before in the United States.
Right.
Yet in your film, what you document is how our popular culture largely has gone the other direction. I mean, it's right, far worse towards regarding women than it was back in the 50s, 40s, or 30s.
Right. I mean, there's a real backlash that we're seeing, and in most cases, it's probably in the subconscious of leaders. But really, the fact of the matter is that women are 3% of media positions of clout. So 97% of what you're reading and hearing and observing comes from the male perspective, and that's not necessarily wrong. It's just not reflective of a democracy where women are 51% of the population, and we give birth to 100% of the population. And what we're, through misrepresentation.org and our movement, what we're really encouraging is men of consciousness to stand up and speak out and use their voices to call out sexism. Not only as the individuals, but institutionally. And then for women to be encouraged into the pipelines of leadership, and for us to not only mentor, but sponsor women into leadership.
Our guest today, Jennifer Siebel Newsom, filmmaker, maker of the brand new and highly acclaimed film Misrepresentation, a documentary. And if you'd like to call in to WILL with questions for our guest, the phone number here, 217-333-9455, our toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. And you can go to the website that Ms. Newsom mentioned, www.misrepresentation.org, and two S's in Miss, misrepresentation.org. And one of the things at the website that's very helpful is you can click on a location and see where it's showing in your area. And I happened to click on Illinois, and I noticed that you will be in Northern Illinois giving a few talks next month.
Exactly. I'm looking forward to it. My father's from Illinois. My father was born in Savannah, Illinois.
All right.
And I've spent some, I really enjoy Chicago. So,
you know, what struck me, I have a daughter of 16 and another one who's in her early 20s. So I've been had a lot of experience being immersed in the culture you show in the film.
Yes.
and what girls are exposed to. And I suspect I've got listeners to the program who don't have children, especially daughters, in the last 10 or 15 years, and probably don't really have a direct experience immersed with the immersion in culture that these kids are getting now.
Right.
And really, it's probably a very abstract issue to them. So for the sake of those listeners who don't have a 16-year-old daughter like I do, maybe give them a sense of what the media experience is of a girl growing up in America today.
Sure. So American teens are consuming 10 hours and 45 minutes of media a day. I mean, so think about the fact that they're in school and then they're hopefully sleeping. Somewhere in there, there's a lot of media in all forms. And increasingly with the iPad and the iPhone, 24/7 news, infotainment, reality TV, and this whole sort of tabloid celebrity culture, you know, it's everywhere. It's at the bus stop. It's in the stands in the airport when you're going to catch your flight. It's, you know, on the freeway. It's in our news, you know. So it's challenging. And what we're seeing with young girls in particular, and this is where my heart goes out to any young woman 30 and under right now in particular, is that these girls are being sold sex and violence 24/7, as are boys. And they grow up as a result of not seeing enough women in leadership and in power, not seeing enough women who are in the public, not being held to a double standard. They lose their confidence, their self-esteem. The depression rates are skyrocketing, eating disorders. There's lower political efficacy, lower ambition as a result, and these women get kind of caught up in this whole cycle of thinking, once, as I mentioned earlier, that their values in their youth, their beauty, and their sexuality, and wasting so much time feeling limited and not recognizing that there's a whole other world out there, and that unfortunately this is all a part of this patriarchy that we live in, and this capitalist construct that is hierarchical in nature, and is unfortunately women are oppressed. I mean, it's, you know, in 2012, it's rather disturbing.
You know, one of the terms you use in the film is, and talk about at some length, is self-objectification.
Yes.
And that's sort of an academic-y type term. Could you explain what you mean by it and why it's an important concept?
Sure. So it's basically we're spending so much time objectifying ourselves, focusing on ourselves, that it's taking away from our ability to contribute to the political sphere, to public service, to the greater world. As a result of lower political efficacy and self-objectification, you're seeing, as I mentioned, all these things like self-esteem and depression and, you know, lower self-esteem, depression, et cetera.
Sounds a lot like sort of narcissism.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways, or promoting
that. I think it's, we have to do something about it. I mean, at the end of the day, we have to educate young women in particular media, you know, give them sort of gendered media literacy education and help them understand that there's so much more to life than this bubble around themselves, and that their value is from inside, and it's not as the media communicates to them based on what they look like. And that they have a role and a place in society, and that we need them. I mean, I look at where we are as a country today, and when you look at our education system, our healthcare system, the environment, look at all the wars we've been a part of recently, we're a mess. And for the most part, the leadership has not been held by women. For the most part, the leadership has been held by men who have not been conscious and caring in their leadership. And so I think it's high time we give women an opportunity and men of consciousness an opportunity to lead. I think right now across the board institutionally where women are 18% of leadership representation. And that's tragic when we are 51% of the population.
And it's also quite striking when you look at virtually every other major nation in the world, and not just in the West, but really around the world, the United States really comes up short.
Yes. So we, to your point, we are the only industrialized nation in the world that doesn't have paid family leave. We have no child care or flex time policies either. We have to adapt to the times. And my big thing is, what does this say about our values as a country? Do we really value the family? Do we really value the mother? If we paid stay-at-home moms, we pay them $117,000 a year, according to a 2011 study. That's a lot of money, a lot of money. And you know, we're not doing enough in general to value and support women. And, you know, the war on women exists, whether people want to admit it or not. And so I'm so grateful that the media is taking the time to kind of dissect this and understand that there's a lot that needs to be done to elevate women's voices in the leadership sector.
Our guest today on Media Matters is Jennifer Siebel Newsom, an actress and documentary filmmaker. We're talking about her first film, which is shown at Sundance, called Misrepresentation. You can go to the website misrepresentation.org, and there's two S's in Miss and Misrepresentation, and learn about the film, see trailers, see where it's going to be showing, get involved with the issues of the way women are portrayed in our commercial and popular culture and battling that. And, you know, as a father with my wife, we've both been sort of dealing with the issues you talk about in the film, because I think parents feel like we're dealing with a tidal wave here. Like we're out there with a ping pong paddle.
Right.
And we're this tidal wave of, frankly, commercialism, because so much of it is driven by selling stuff to kids.
Yes.
And I like the fact that in your film, you really repeatedly return to sort of getting at what's driving this.
Yeah. No, thank you. I mean, you know, there's a danger, obviously, with media conglomeration in 96 and with, you know, the fact that all media outlets are all about getting the most eyeballs, so whatever, you know, sex and violence seem to be selling. So what we're doing through at misrepresentation.org is we're reminding people of their power as consumers and citizens. So as a consumer, we should be supporting good media, media that's diverse, that explores humanity, that addresses real problems and not, you know, how puffy someone's face is. And we, at the same time, should be not consuming the damaging tabloid media, which by nature is disrespectful and limiting in its portrayals of women. And that's easy to do. It's just reminding people that they're part of the problem if they're consuming it. And eventually, if we stop consuming it, those products and those programs will go away. But it really takes us being responsible and also writing in letters and calling out the companies that are really, really, you know, disrespectful and that do egregious things. And then on the citizen side, you know, one of the things I don't think we, and I'm speaking for many women and men here, but women in particular and fathers of daughters, we need to, when we're out there voting and casting our ballot and endorsing and giving money to those vying for political office, we need to really ask them the hard questions about what they're doing for women, what they're doing in our country, or what they will champion in terms of, you know, policies to protect our children. You know, right now we have the pornification of mainstream media that's going on in our country, And it's increasingly selling sex and violence to kids at younger and younger ages. Well, this is, as you said, this is why there's a tidal wave of danger being sold to our kids right now, and we have to do something about it. So who's really fighting for our families and fighting for healthy American values and trying to protect our kids from consuming such limiting notions and sexualized notions of what it is to be a woman and what it is to be a man?
And, you know, you go in the film, you do talk about that boys hardly are, this isn't a great system for boys ultimately either, or for
right.
men. And, you know, one of the things, I watch some of these reality shows periodically with my daughter until she
yes.
kicks me out of the room. And, you know, the images, the portrayal of what a boy boy is in these shows is appalling, frankly.
Yes. And by the way, the fact that you're watching with her is really important. I think that's one of the things we say to parents is, if you're going to watch it, if you and your family, your kids are going to watch it, then watch it with them and talk about it and say, why is she dressed like that? And, you know, could that character be a woman instead of a guy? And do you know anyone that's really reflective of the people that you're seeing on screen? And why do you think they're communicating that message? And you don't have those values, do you? You know what I mean? So there's a lot we can do to empower and educate our kids and give them media literacy training while we're actually consuming that.
Our guest, Jennifer Siebel Newsom, maker of the new film, Misrepresentation. Phone lines are open at 333-9455. The toll-free line is open at 1-800-222-9455. Let's go to our first caller now. Line 4, Chicago, you're on there with Jennifer Newsom.
Yeah, hi. Well, I haven't seen the movie, but everything you found seems pretty on the mark. I guess the only thing I would, certainly your emphasis on boys is good. If you want to know why there's so many shootings in major cities, it's not because of the access of guns. It's because teenage boys watch one thing 24 hours a day if they could, and that's guys running around shooting, and it all turns out good in the end. Everything's fine.
Yeah.
And, they get what they want. So if you want to know why they're shooting, that's why they're shooting. But, you know, you're not going to solve this thing through consumerism. You're not going to solve it by getting people to turn off these shows. I mean, this is billions and billions of dollars that is getting pumped into these kids' brains and the entire population's brains. And there's no amount of the brief time kids are in school or they're with their parents that can combat it. It is a absolute tidal wave of corporate power pouring over the entire population. And there's only one way you're going to fix it, and that's you got to take it away from them. You got to take the money away from them. It's ill-gotten gains. It needs to be taken away from these corporate powers. It's the only way you're going to do it. Everything else is you're just spitting in the wind.
Well, thank you very much, caller. Ms. Newsom, any response to that?
No, thank you for sharing that. You know, that's one of the things we're exploring in our next documentary when we delve into sort of androcentrism and this hyper-masculine culture that encourages violence, particularly violence amongst, you know, our young male population. One of the things that we're trying to do is sort of approach this through different mechanisms. So we have our education curriculum, which is available. It's age-appropriate modules that are available kindergarten through third grade, fourth and fifth, middle school and high school. So we're trying to get at boys and girls at younger and younger ages. Right now we're in over 3,000 schools across the country. We're also, and part of that gendered media literacy is, you know, homework, assignments, classroom exercises, definitions, the whole thing, to basically re-educate the next generation of youth because they're ultimately going to be running these media companies, right? But the big thing is you've got to get more women. So if women are 3% of media positions of clout, we've got to see a tipping point of at least 30% and hopefully someday 51% of women in clout positions in the media. And I guarantee once you have that, you're not going to see as much violence in the media. And so I think that's another way that we're targeting this. And one of the things we're doing at misrepresentation.org is we're not only hosting town halls across the country, but we're going into the media industry and hosting salons and working groups and really coming up with best practices in advertising and in entertainment media and in publishing and news media. And it's all about thought leadership and consciousness and reminding people at the top of the connectivity between what they're producing and exporting and how that's impacting a young person in that particular leader's life. So I agree with you, it's so daunting, but I do believe that through consumer activism, citizen responsibility, and you know, political accountability and holding politicians accountable, and then through education And lastly, through really going in and challenging best practices in the media industry in particular, and making sure that we get, you know, a tipping point of 30% women behind the scenes in top positions, I think we'll start to transform that.
You know, back in the 1990s, Nickelodeon was exploding as a Viacom division, 24/7, or not, well, most of the day, advertising programs to children, having shows with ads to children. And the head of Nickelodeon was a woman. I think her name was Jennifer Laybourne, but I might be wrong.
Yes.
And I remember an interview with her because I was doing some research on the subject. And, you know, she was wrestling with the fact that she was marinating children's brains in advertising. And all the research showed that was not a good thing. And she acknowledged she didn't let her own kids watch that much TV.
Right.
But she still did it because if she didn't, she would have lost her job. You know, because if she didn't take the ads, Disney Channel or Cartoon Network would gladly have taken all those ads. And so it sort of put, you know, her, she basically acknowledged that I don't, you know, if I want to keep this job and enjoy the standard of living I have, this is sort of what I have to do because this is where the money is. And I think the caller is getting that. And your documentary gets at this industry that's built on basically selling stuff, and especially to girls,
right.
and to sell beauty products and anything related to your appearance to girls, the sales pitch always is you aren't good enough.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's sort of built into the system, isn't it?
It is built in the system. It's institutionalized, exactly. And we have to be more creative. I mean, yes, right now sex sells. We should be more creative. You know, making women insecure supposedly sells. Women are so much smarter than that. I mean, women have 86% of household, they make 86% of household consumption decisions in our country. And we're really discrediting their intelligence. And that's part of our campaign, is to awaken people to really their role in this and how much smarter that they are than the companies make them out to be. And so I think through re-education and this building of this movement and consciousness raising, I do feel optimistic that we're going to have an impact. It might be slow going, but, you know, I'm committed to this. I have a son and a daughter, and I want them to aspire and recognize that that they're equal and to be able to fulfill both of their dreams and ambitions. And, you know, I hope to raise my son, you know, biological differences aside, I really hope to raise him to care and to be gentle and to not be afraid of the feminine and to really value and respect women, just as I want to raise my daughter to value herself from the inside out, first and foremost, but to see her potential as a leader and to aspire to be whatever she dreams. And so, you know, it's at the end of the day, it really comes down to, you know, putting our money where our mouth is and, walking a life where our values are part of our everyday actions, whether it's our jobs or the way we raise our kids or our own activism.
Our guest, Jennifer Siebel Newsom, maker of the new film, Misrepresentation. You can learn about the film at the website, misrepresentation.org. Again, two S's in Miss. The phone number here at Media Matters, 333-9455. Toll free, 1-800-222-9455. We've got some callers who've been waiting patiently. Let's go to them now. Starting with line one, Champagne, you're on the air with Jennifer Newsom.
Hi, first I just wanted to say thank you very much. You guys are talking about a matter that's very near and dear to my heart. As I'm, you know, in my mid-30s, but as kind of the first generation exposed to cable and MTV, I remember as an adolescent those really self-limiting feelings on womanhood that developed in me before my peers because I had such a more steeped exposure to media than a lot of the other kids on my block. And basically, the thing that allowed me to kind of transform and transcend these ideas that were pressed upon me by outside culture as a girl growing up in the South was the Riot Girl movement and the punk movement, which really allowed me to be exposed to boys who had more liberal attitudes towards women, and then also to women who had more progressive attitudes about what it was to be a woman. And I was just wondering what your feelings were on what are the new movements, you know, obviously including yourself, that are out there for teenage girls and young women, because the media now is even so much more oppressive, I feel like, than it was, you know, 10 years prior. So I'm kind of looking at the things that are going to kind of allow, you know, teenagers and girls in their young 20s to find something in the underground movement, the artistic movement, that they can be a part of that can allow them to escape this kind of preformed mold of what they need to be.
Yes. So if you go to misrepresentation.org, we actually were founded on partnerships with organizations from the White House Project to Common Sense Media to the Women's Media Center to Girls, Inc., Step Up, the International Museum of Women, Girls for Change, et cetera. So there are so many different organizations out there doing incredible work, and I think it sort of depends on the individual and what they're attracted to. What I'm really advocating is partnership, because at the end of the day, we can't do this on our own. And so we strategically aligned ourselves with these different organizations, and increasingly so this year with the Girl Scouts and some other organizations to leverage each other's strengths and each other's constituents and really be unified. One of the things I struggled with when I thought about change was, you know, we were all sort of operating in silos. So how could we actually work together? Moms Rising is another organization that we're hoping to do more work with. So in terms of young women in particular, I think there's a lot of information online and a lot of incredible organizations that we're partnered with. I think as well, though, that this is about them using their voices, telling their stories, being a part of media, whether it's alternative media, you know, cutting their own films, their own trailers. There's so much that can be done. We need more women in the pipelines of leadership. How do you get there? You know, you start, you study, you are mentored, you're sponsored, whatever it is, you volunteer, you intern. And there are just so many opportunities. Right now we have this whole Be a Rep program where we have youth not only across the country but around the world that are engaging activists in their communities and really leveraging the community's sort of strength and prioritizing what needs to be sort of focused on in that community. So there's a lot. There's so much. And join us online because I think you'll find a lot more information there.
You know, as with the question she had or the comment she made about the fact that it seems so much worse now than it was just 10 years ago, and then 10 years ago it seemed much worse than it was 10 years before that, that's my impression too. I remember when the film Clueless came out in the mid-90s with Alicia Silverstone, and it was sort of a cute, funny film. And, you know, but it was sort of like this air glorification to a certain extent of sort of the mall rat airhead mentality. And now, I mean, the Clueless character looks like a Phi Beta Kappa candidate compared to what routinely goes on in these reality shows.
Right, right. You know, when I set out, Bob, to make this film, I was literally denied and rejected by so many who I'd gone to speak to for advice, support, financial support, to be a part of the team. I was told this film had been made before. I was told that we'd already achieved parity in our country. Look, we had Hillary Clinton run for the presidency. I was told that women overseas had bigger problems than we had. I mean, so many. It was really interesting. And so I'm just so appreciative that I stuck to my guns and was stubborn and didn't basically let people talk me down, because we've really been a part of a full-fledged movement. The fact that we're in over 3,000 schools across the country, the fact that we've actually, as a film, started a movement that's championing change. I mean, I think it's the way documentaries are going to be moving, because there's so much power to the medium, and then if you can actually turn that into actual change, I think that's even more powerful. And it's just been an incredible ride, and so I hope everyone will join us.
Before we go back to the phone lines, let me play studio executive devil's advocate and give you a conversation I suspect you've had several times, but
sure.
I'll allow our listeners to be in on it this time.
Great.
They will say, well, gee, Jennifer Siebel Newsom, that's a great idea, but we only put shows on that can make money, and that means we have to have stuff that audiences will watch. And if we put on the sort of stuff you want, no one's going to watch that. Clearly, all the money's, we're giving the people what they want. We have every economic incentive to do so. And if this is what young girls want to watch, this stuff, they're watching it like crazy right now, and it's clearly making us money. And if they wanted to watch that sort of stuff you like, they'd be watching it.
So the argument there is there is a supply and demand issue, but the studios are not always, as Gina Davis says eloquently in the film, the studios are not always giving us what we want. In fact, when you look at just the film picture, the reason male-driven feature studio films have a greater have greater returns in terms of the number of people that go and see the film is because the marketing budget is that much greater. But if you actually give the same marketing budget to a female director or a female writer, a film with a female protagonist, you'd see the same box office returns. And a lot of it is because people invest in, write, direct what they know. And so because in Hollywood last year, female writers and directors were less than 10% of the directors in the top 250 grossing films, the majority of what was being written and directed came from the male perspective. And so therefore, that's where all the marketing dollars went to. And so those films, therefore, saw the greatest box office returns. And the same goes for reality shows, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, I could argue there are so many incredible female-driven dramas out there. I mean, look at Homeland. Homeland stars Claire Danes. It's doing extremely well for Showtime. Look at Scandal, the new ABC show. I guarantee that film will do very well, and it has Kerry Washington, the first time an African-American woman has been the lead in primetime. The problem is the industry doesn't give these shows enough time to actually find an audience. And it's harder for women, yes, because we're juggling so much, to actually discover these shows, oftentimes because we're working and taking care of the house and raising our families. But the studios need to give us a chance, and they need to invest marketing dollars behind these female-driven shows where you're seeing complex female characters, not just sort of the reality show character who's now famous for a sex tape.
Let's go back to our phone lines now. Our guest, Jennifer Siebel Newsom, maker of the new film, Misrepresentation. You can learn about the film at www.misrepresentation.org and two S's in Miss. Let's now go to line two, Urbana. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks. First, thanks so much for your work. I haven't seen the film, but I'm looking forward to seeing it. Early on in this discussion, there is a little talk about potential narcissism in girls and problems in self-esteem being an issue here, but I'm really struck by how often we blame individuals in this culture, particularly when it comes to communities disenfranchised, as female youth are. And I haven't seen your film, like I said, and I'm sure you're not blaming girls here, but discussion on self-esteem can often teeter on this really dangerous precipice of who's to blame here. And I know you've been talking about how shows need to change, how there needs to be more leadership, but identities are really socially constructed. And I think girls are really astute and strong, and smart in realizing that there are societal constraints and limits to their access to power within society due to, like, what's in their pants. And as kids, they're trying to figure out how to be taken seriously and how to be seen as legitimate by a society that always says that they're going to exist later. Yeah. when they're adults, and they have fewer adults with time for them, with, you know, the labor constraints in our country. Classrooms are packed, so teachers have less time and they're more burdened. I don't even know what counselors do anymore. But with this, you said that media literacy is needed, but I'm really not convinced that retooling girls is the answer here. Also, leadership, more females, is a good thing, but, you know, Margaret Thatcher and Condi Rice were women. I'm wondering if you could just talk more about the importance of media reform, of cultural reform around these issues that you're so importantly raising. Also, I know not all countries have the same media policies towards youth as we do in the U.S., so maybe you could touch on that a little bit, and I appreciate your comments. Thanks.
That's a real cocktail there for you to work on, Jennifer Newsom.
Thank you. I appreciate it. A lot there, and I'm trying to see where I can start tackling this. We definitely need media reform, and we need our politicians to not be in the hands of lobbyists and media companies and recognize that we elect them to stand up to media companies, and they need to speak out, and they need to do something about this.
You know, let me stop you on that point, Jennifer, because, you know, she was referring to other countries, the caller was, and, you know, some countries like Sweden and Norway and my West Norwegian, so I get to spend a lot of time there, make it illegal to advertise on television to children under the age of 12. So if a show has over a certain percentage of viewers, the rating show, are under the age of 12, you just simply is not allowed to have any advertising on it. Is that the sort of policy you think that would be effective here?
I do. I mean, I haven't actually explored that, and I love that, and I thank you. I've been looking at some of the other policies that aren't media related in Sweden and Norway that I really admire in terms of family leave. But I think that that's very interesting, and I think we should consider that. I definitely do. I mean, I have to say I've written a few letters to Comcast in California, because when I turn the TV on in the morning, I have a son and a daughter. My son's 10 months old, and if I'm, when I was breastfeeding or feeding my son, and my daughter was, you know, eating or something or needed to be entertained for, you know, 5 minutes, I would turn Caillou on KQED, which is the PBS affiliate in Northern California, and I'd go to Comcast's on-demand box, and at the end of the show or at the beginning, there'd be an advertising box with a lot of violence and sexualized women and just graphic visuals that are so inappropriate for children, so inappropriate. Just the sounds that were coming out of the TV were so inappropriate. And, you know, and so we do need to do something about that. And I've written to Comcast, and I'm asking them to please, you know, remove, you know, violent and sexually graphic advertising from their on-demand, especially when it comes to kids. So we'll see if they do anything about it. But that's a great example of something that we can do and should explore. Again, as we mentioned earlier, we're selling sex and violence to our kids. Their brains aren't fully formed until they're in their early 20s. It's so unhealthy. It is not fair. We're sending them on a track that is, you know, we shouldn't be surprised that we have self-esteem issues in this country. We shouldn't be surprised that, you know, depression rates are skyrocketing. The self-objectification, to get to your earlier comment, the woman that called in, you know, it's part of this whole kind of world that is continuing to oppress women and minorities, and we're not doing enough about it. We have a mental health problem in this country, and the media, I think, is the mainstream media, not all media, because this is an example of media doing the opposite, which is healthy, but mainstream media really plays a large role in that, and our politicians are not doing enough to protect us. Corporate America is not looking. They could do so much more in terms of a triple bottom line. If they actually cared more about finances, cared less about finances, and more or equally about their social bottom line and their environmental bottom line, again, we'd see a different corporate culture, and advertising might even be slightly different.
Do you have any other comments you want to make for that last caller before we go to our next caller? Did you have any?
I apologize. Well, happy to discuss more of this online at misrepresentation.org.
Okay, well, let's go to our next caller then. Line 3, Urbana, you're on the air with Jennifer Siebel Newsom.
Hi, I'd like to reiterate that. I'm so glad you're doing the show. This, too, is a topic that's dear to my heart, so I'm glad you're doing it. And I did see the film, and it's wonderful. I first wanted to give a shout out. You had said something earlier about Women's Media Center. I get a lot of information from the Women's Media Center, and I really think that's a good place to get information about the subject. Also, AAUW is another organization that does a lot of research on women's equity, so I just wanted to say that as well. But one part of the film that I really thought was good was when your emphasis on the double standard of how particularly women in leadership are portrayed in the media versus how men in leadership positions are portrayed in the media. And it specifically talked about Hillary Clinton and how she was portrayed when she was running versus some of the men. And I think that's key. But another thing, and this is my last point, the other thing that I think is key that you did kind of touch on earlier is that gender roles for boys and men haven't changed nearly as much as for girls and women. And I think there still is an active teaching that goes on with boys that you don't want to do anything feminine or female. There's something wrong with that. And if you look at children's programming and children's books, characters and books, most characters are still male. Or if there's an animated show where there's, you know, different, you know, things that aren't usually alive that are animated, most of those, unless it's a cat, is going to be male. And so I think that the way we teach boys and girls of what is normal has a lot to do with this as well. And if you could just comment on that.
Yeah, no, exactly. A couple quick things. So funny, I just spoke to the AAUW last night in Santa Clara. It was an incredible evening. And so I'm glad that you mentioned the AAUW is a great organization.
Something else related to your comment about women aspiring towards leadership and the double standard. Just this morning in our hometown, the San Francisco Chronicle, there was an article around the district that I'm now in, which is actually just out of the city, and I have endorsed a female candidate. And the two pictures of the two, there are like eight Democrats running and two Republicans running, and of the of those running, they just put two pictures of two men in there. And I just thought, and the woman who I've endorsed has raised more money than any of the men. And she's a newcomer, but she's now in second place. And I was really disappointed that they spoke about her a lot in the article, but they couldn't even put a picture up there of her. And I thought that was kind of interesting, and it's partially because I bet I know who the Chronicle's endorsing, which is one of the men, who's sort of the insider. So I just want to point that out, that locally we all need to be engaged, and when there are women that we, or men of consciousness who, you know, value women and champion women, when those people are running in our districts, we need to get up and out and stand up for them and speak out for them and endorse them. Then related to the gender roles in publishing, you know, since my daughter, my eldest is 2.5, she's a girl, and then my son's 10 months. So my daughter, every book was, I was so disturbed, and there are more and more books out there now that have female protagonists, but all the old stuff, literally, to your point, has our male protagonists. And I would just, you know, she's not reading yet, so I would just make that character a girl. And I speak to her in Spanish, so eventually she would, you know, now that she sort of knows what a boy looks like versus a girl, she'll re-correct me and say that that's a niño and not a niña. But that's how I started. And there are more, there's a website that it should be up, a link to our website of books that are great and empowering and inspiring for young girls. There's this new website that's out of D.C. that's doing some great stuff there. But we need to keep telling our stories, and I encourage all women out there and men who care about women and have daughters to tell those stories, because there aren't enough out there. And we need to read those stories about powerful young girls to our sons, and I'm definitely going to be doing that.
Jennifer Siebel, listen, the caller also made an interesting point, something you cover at some length in the film, and it's very powerful, which is the way women politicians get covered in the news media, and how divergent it is from the way male politicians are covered, with a much greater emphasis on their appearance, their looks, their sexuality. And this is across the board, Republicans, Democrats.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you put the montage together, the commentary, frankly, it's overpowering.
Yes.
And why don't you just talk a little bit about what you found?
So everything from using, you know, always asking the woman about her family, how could she actually, you know, be in the White House, who would be taking care of her kids, or you know, be in Congress, whatever it is, to comment, one that's very subtle but that I appreciate, in news articles, you know, the woman is often complaining about something, whereas the man in the equivalent position is stating something,
mm-hmm,
or asking something. You know, just the disgusting comments that we heard from both radio and TV personalities, and reporters basically, you know, commenting on these women's, their attire, their sexual attractiveness, whether or not you'd want to sleep with them. I mean, disgusting stuff. And, you know, the one little point that I really find interesting was how John Boehner was on the cover of four or five national magazines within his first 4 weeks as Speaker of the House. And in Speaker Pelosi's first 4 years, she was, as Speaker, she was not on the cover of one national weekly magazine.
It is quite striking. And, you know, the other thing that you talk about related to news is you look at the television news journalists, and there's a number of women now play significant roles on these cable TV news channels. And but, you know, I'll let you take it from here. When you look at them, what are you seeing?
Well, you're seeing women pitted against each other. You're seeing women really sexualized. You know, it's interesting. There's a real fine line that I think women in news are having to walk today, and hopefully will increasingly walk it, which is being presentable and professional so that you can be taken seriously, but not over kind of sexualizing ourselves. And I say ourselves just because I was just on TV this morning, even though I was a guest, I wasn't an anchor. So It's something that, unfortunately, women are held to a double standard. But I think, you know, here's a quick story that I find interesting. Just, I wasn't on the news, but I was just going on TV. I did a show about the documentary, and I'll try and make this really quick. I was on Rosie's show, and it was interesting because here I was going on to talk about misrepresentation, and I had some of the young girls from the show on with me and Megan McCain, who loved the documentary. And the hair lady, I asked if we could just put my hair back in a bun or in a ponytail because I have really long hair and I was breastfeeding and I just wanted to be taken seriously. And I felt like with my long hair down, it just, you know, was a little bit distracting. And I put my and she kind of fought me on it. She didn't kind of. She said she would have to talk to the producers. And she said, well, don't you want to look sexy? And I was just shocked. I said, have you seen the documentary? Do you even know what it's about? I said, I do not want to look sexy. So I just think it's something that is important for us to be conscious of and aware of. And right now, what's happening is some people behind the scenes in news companies, they're really sexualizing those anchors in unhealthy ways.
It's outrageous. Let's be honest. I mean, it's like, I think you had the cut from Jay Leno. They were doing a game on the Tonight Show where are these... take a guess of these news anchors, or I forget what the other option was, the cocktail waitresses or something.
Yeah, exactly. Is she a news anchor or a Hooters?
Hooters, yeah.
Waitress,
Hooters
right?
Waitress. I mean, because the outfits they're wearing are absurd.
Yeah, no, it's not, and it's just continuing the damage that's being done when we hypersexualize and objectify women for the male gaze. It just, at the end of the day, it just treats them as objects, and then objects are to be acted upon, and it just continues to the cycle that, you know, it's no wonder we have all this violence against women in our country.
And then part of the issue you get at the film, which is interesting, and it actually has your husband, then the mayor of San Francisco, I think, was talking about this, is sometimes the opposition to changing things comes from women themselves. I mean, there are a lot of women who are upset when they get this, you know, they aren't part of the change process yet.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that with younger generations, hopefully, growing up in such a diverse world with more women in leadership and recognizing that there's room for all of us, I'm hoping that things will really change and that there will be this less fear. You know, we're an oppressed gender, and so in some cases there's this fear that there isn't room for all of us and that there's a scarcity. And if we can all realize that there's room for all of us to succeed and we have to help each other up because her success is also your success, I think that's going to transform the culture.
Let's go back to our final caller for the show. Line one, Urbana, you're on there with Jennifer Siebel Newsom.
I just want to put in a local pitch for women leadership. There was a leadership luncheon by the university YWCA in early March where 6 women who've been really good role models had an audience of 120, including young people, observing them get leadership awards here in the community, because you had an earlier call asking, where do you look for role models?
Yeah.
Well,
so,
thank you very much,
another.
Caller.
Okay.
Jennifer Siebel Newsom, in addition to misrepresentation, you're connected to, I think, in a production capacity, to another documentary that's come out, and I did not have a chance to see it. Otherwise, we would have spent time talking about it today, but I've read about it. I saw an interview with the director, and it's an extraordinary film. There's no other word for it. I think it's one of the most important films that's been made in years, and it's called Invisible War. And could you just talk a little bit about that film to sort of whet the appetite of our listeners?
Yes. So The Invisible War, which was directed by Oscar and Emmy-nominated filmmaker Kirby Dick and produced by Amy Ziering, an Emmy-nominated producer, premiered at Sundance and won the Audience Award. And it's basically an investigation into the most underreported crime in America, which is the epidemic of rape within our military. So today, over 20% of female veterans have been sexually assaulted while serving. That's 1 in 5 women. In the past year, over 3,000 sexual assault cases were reported, but the DOD, who provides all these stats, knows that so few victims come forward, actually believe that the real number is closer to 19,000 assaults.
You know, when I saw the interview with the filmmaker, Kirby Dick, and then I saw clips of the film, they had interviews on the, what I was watching with some of the women who were portrayed in the film.
Yes.
The stories are, you know, they're incredible.
Yes.
I mean, they're just, it's beyond belief that this could be going on. And then the military's sort of lack of urgency in addressing how these women are being raped and abused is, you know, appalling.
It is. I mean, you know, it's interesting. There's the military claims zero tolerance, but it's zero tolerance as rhetoric. It's the fact that this is going on and that nothing has really been done to separate the prosecution from the DOD. I mean, that's the problem, right? So in many cases, a woman's perpetrator could also be the prosecutor, if you think about it that way. I mean, why would she actually basically report the crime? So there's a lot of that we need to do when we need to basically shed light on this issue. And one of the reasons my partner Regina Kulik-Scully and I agreed to get behind this and executive produce this documentary is because we love these filmmakers. But more than anything, these women's stories are so powerful, and men as well. Men are also victims of sexual assault in the military. These stories are so powerful, need to be told, and if the military can change its tune, if the military can be accountable and actually protect the women who are serving our country, you know, that and not actually harm them and send them off to be sort of to deal with the emotional trauma that results from being assaulted by a fellow service member. You know, to think about how that could trickle down to the rest of society, given the power of the institution of the military institution.
So it sounds like you're becoming sort of a studio force here. You're executive producing films, making. You've got another film in the works. It sounds like.
Yes, and we're working on this film that delves into how we're raising our boys and hypermasculinity in our culture, and how we can help our boys. And I'm really excited about it as the mother of a 10-month-old boy.
I
want to change the culture for both of my kids and all of your kids and grandkids.
And Jennifer Siebel-Dusen, we've only got a couple minutes left, so maybe you could talk, because I know you're doing this as part of a movement to make change, and that's really the focus here. And if you go to the misrepresentation.org website, it'll be clear. Can you just talk again in concrete terms? People listening to the show care about this issue, want to learn more, but also want to get involved. What sort of concrete steps can people take?
Join us at misrepresentation.org, and please, and take the pledge. We have really interesting conversations daily online on Facebook and Twitter, but mostly we're a part of these larger campaigns. We have a Not Buying It campaign where we're really giving people tools to stand up to sexism in advertising and in corporate America. We have the education curriculum, which is age-appropriate, starting in kindergarten, because our kids are, I mean, my kids have already at 10 months of age been sold brands and messages about what it is to be a boy and what it is to be a girl. I have a quick little story. Sorry. You want a quick story? Really quick one?
It's got to be a super quick one.
Super quick one. My son, right out of the womb, first gift, letter, like lovely, lovely letters from the president and the vice president welcoming him into the world, suggesting that the world was his oyster. He was his pearl. He received a blue T-shirt with messaging in large caps, future president. And I laughed, but I also, and I was so touched. But my daughter, our eldest, never even received a suggestion that she too could be future president. I mean, think about that. That's how we raise our boys and girls right out of the womb. Our boys can be president. Our boys are taught to master their environment. Our girls are taught to master their bodies, and that's a shame, and we have to do something about it.
Jennifer Siebel-Dusen, on that eloquent note, I want to thank you very much for taking an hour out of your busy schedule to join us here at Media Matters.
Thank you so much, Bob. It was very enjoyable.
Same for me. And I want to thank Kyle Kroha, my engineer. I want to thank my producer, Christina Williams, for her fantastic work. And recall, everyone, we'll be on for a two-hour Media Matters next week with John Nichols talking about politics and trying to raise money for this wonderful radio station. I hope you join us for the full 2 hours next week. Until then, this is Bob McChesney saying take care, everyone.
WMATA. Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Mike Weaver Ballroom Dance, private instruction for social or competitive dancing, weddings, or other special events. Lessons for singles or couples, beginners or advanced of all ages. Information at 378-4601 or on your web, search at Mike Weaver Ballroom Dance.
Partly sunny today. The high will be around 80, but very windy conditions, gusting to 45. Tonight, showers and thunderstorms. Some storms may be severe. The low dips into the mid-50s. Monday, mostly sunny and cooler. Highs in the mid-60s. Windy, with gusts to 35 miles an hour. Rain returns Thursday night.